So, welcome to this next episode of our RCSLT podcast, which is focusing on really interesting papers that have come out in our journal, the International Journal of Language and Communication Disorders, or IJLCD. This week, we're looking at a paper entitled Voice Banking for People Living with Motor Neurone Disease, Views and Expectations. And we're very fortunate to have the lead author with us, Richard Cave. Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm very good. And thank you. Thank you so much for asking me. It's just a real privilege to be able to talk about this stuff.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. It's a real privilege for us to be able to hear about it in a bit more detail. I always tend to start by just asking about the clinical question that the researchers were looking to answer. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So the clinical questions in the paper were to understand what people living with MND consider when deciding whether or not to bank their voice and what their expectations are, and indeed what the expectations of significant communication partners are. And I think in order to kind of clarify why I was asking those, why we wanted to ask those questions, it'd be nice to give a bit of context and a bit of background to motor neurone disease and the communication difficulties that people living with MND have. So motor neurone disease, MND, also known as amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, it affects the brain, it affects the nerves in the brain and spinal cord that tell your muscles what to do. It's a progressive disease, and sadly, there is no cure. Average life expectancy is around 2 to 3 years from diagnosis. And on average, here in the UK, there are about 5,000 people living with MND at any one time, around 1 in 300. And it's really, you know, it's really not as rare as some people may think. Part of the progression of MND is that more than 80% of people will become unable to communicate using natural speech, and will potentially use assistive technology, which is also known as augmentative and alternative communication, or just AAC for short. And take up is quite high for this group. Many of these AAC devices come with their own synthetic voice, as it was. And so people can type or input a message into a device, and it is spoken using this synthetic voice. And this whole idea about voice banking is a way for a person to make their own synthetic voice that usually sounds a bit more like how they sound on the day that they recorded it.
Yeah.
So it's not the same as their own voice. And it cannot convey the subtleties that we have in natural speech, like the variation on stress, volume, emotion, tone, pitch, rate, and even silence. All that stuff that makes, you know, the richness of our communication so complex. And I was working with a poet who has MND, and she was banking her voice. And she said, you know, Richard, I can say the phrase, I'm okay, in 10 different ways and mean 10 different things. But using my voice bank, it will sound exactly the same every single time. And so the technology is, you know, is advanced in some ways that it can, it kind of captures the timbre of people's voice. And sometimes it can capture accent. But for so much of the other stuff in which we use in language, it cannot capture that because the technology is that advanced. And yet suppliers, you know, often, unfortunately, make various claims about the realism of a voice bank. And, you know, one has said, you know, it allows you to speak as yourself. And another one says it's going to be a we're going to create a digital copy of your voice to keep this essential part of your identity. And actually, you know, it may be a digital copy of your voice, but it's not a digital copy of my communication. It's not a digital copy of how I am. And very few providers clearly message that actually a voice bank is kind of no more, no less of an output of a of an AAC device. Mm. It's really just another part of a communication device. And we as speech therapists, you know, we understand that, you know, using an AAC device for communication is very different to using natural speech. For example, you know, I'm talking to you now, you know, it's about, I don't know, between 130, 190 words per minute. Mm-hmm. And yet, if we were having this conversation and I was using an AAC device, then it would be significantly slower. Okay. And it goes without saying that, you know, if I put my own voice bank onto that AAC device, it's unlikely by itself to speed things up. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to think about here. And despite all of that, there's been a really big amount of interest in voice banking from within the M&D community. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be growing. So back in 2018, the M&D Association supported around 100 people to bank their voice. Last year, in 2020, more than 600 registered to bank their voice. And so far, you know, kind of here we are, we're not even at the end of March, and over 200 have registered to bank their voice. And so I kind of come back to the question. I come back to it. I just like, you know, I really, really wanted to understand what people living with M&D are considering when deciding whether to bank their voice, what their expectations are, and also indeed the expectations of their communication partners.
Thank you so much for that. It's a really interesting backdrop. The focus for your study is what are the views and expectations of people with M&D about voice banking? Is there any literature about this already? What, and if so, what does the current evidence base say about this?
When I went looking at this, I couldn't find any studies that investigated the value of voice banking. Okay. And that was a similar finding to other researchers. One researcher made an argument that there was kind of that there's a moral case for providing a voice bank for people who are likely to lose natural voice, but acknowledged that there was no quantitative data that showed the difference between kind of AAC use with a voice bank versus AAC use versus the standard synthetic voice that comes. Yeah. And another researcher in a different area reported significant quality of life improvements by enabling people who were prior to having laryngectomy to be able to kind of voice bank while they still could. Mm-hmm. But in that study, it was hard to see how there was a kind of a measure for change in quality of life or how the study could be replicated. And so I think this is an area where further research is warranted.
So you took this qualitative approach where you were really looking at people's views and expectations. Tell us a bit more about the research design and how you explored people's views on this matter.
So it was I conducted semi-structured interviews with 12 people living with M&D and 9 significant others. And it was a mix of people that had chosen they wanted to bank their voice and or had decided, actually, I'm not going to bank my voice. Mm-hmm. And recruitment was a kind of an opportunistic sampling to recruit sufficient numbers. And participants were recruited by either an advert placed in the M&D Association branches or through M&D Association staff. And participants were included who had a diagnosis of M&D or were a communication partner for a person with M&D, were over 18 and resident in England. So in the end, we had 21 participants and 12 M&D, 9 significant communication partners. The people living with M&D were on average 5 months post-diagnosis at the time of interview. 9 had decided to bank their voice and 3 had decided not to. They all used natural speech, didn't require AAC at the interview. In terms of the communication partners, all but one was a spouse and the other one was a daughter. The interviews were transcribed and I used NVivo 12 and used reflexive thematic analysis in the form described by Braun and Clark for qualitative analysis. Mm-hmm. And you know, thematic analysis is kind of recognized, widely used method of identifying themes to analyze concepts and ideas and qualitative data. I kind of worked on initial coding. Mm-hmm. And initially there were like 36, I think 36 sub-themes identified, and then reviewing again, and they were further refined into kind of four main themes and an overarching theme. And the overarching theme was all about identity, okay. About preserving identity through voice banking. Yeah. And the sub-themes were really about keeping control, finding a way to maintain social networks, questions, concerns about using AAC, and also the kind of comments, feedback, really on the support of professionals through the voice banking process.
It immediately strikes me how, for the people who have decided to voice bank, the link to preserving identity makes immediate sense. What about those who decided not to voice bank? What were their thoughts, or what were their results, I guess, in relation to that theme?
It was really interesting because actually identity was core to decision making for both people that wanted to and didn't want to. Okay. And for the people that did want to, they felt that, you know, voice was integral to who they are and in the context of, you know, kind of how things are changing, and they wanted to keep for as long to maintain their voice in some way. Mm-hmm. And actually identity was core for people who chose not to bank their voice because they didn't believe that voice banking could maintain their identity.
Okay.
And they didn't believe that it could bring back the natural voice that they have or once had. Okay. And actually they felt that, you know, kind of other things are mattered more to them rather than spending kind of extended time to bank their voice. And okay. Some of those folks actually, you know, said, actually I'd rather record a video for my family.
Okay.
Or I'd rather do other things rather than spend the time doing that. And for the communication partners, there was a strong kind of talk about identity there as well. And they embraced whichever way the person living with MND chose, they embraced their right to decide that was their decision. That was their autonomy.
Okay.
And, but they felt that actually it was helpful in preserving identity and also supportive of social relationships, particularly, you know, kind of those social relationships that are probably maybe under significant pressure because of the disease.
Yeah.
Because there's no cure in the progression of MND, being able to keep control and to fight back, that voice banking would be a way to keep control of how things are now and potentially how things are going to be in the future.
Yeah.
And also, you know, many of these people live with MND had been kind of quite recently diagnosed, and it felt there was a way to kind of fight back against the diagnosis.
Okay.
And another kind of theme really was about maintenance of networks, and felt that family and social networks would be supported. You know, like if a familiar voice came out of the communication device, that would be better for the family. And One man who he was very keen to, I mean, he was still working and he wanted to keep working for as long as he possibly could. And he felt that having a voice bank using his own voice would be regarded, using that would be regarded as more as a professional thing to do. So that it would be his voice, synthetic voice coming out of the device, and he felt that would better preserve a sense of his role and his business relationships, rather than George Clooney, which is what I always remember him saying. Even though I would quite like George Clooney, I have to say.
Yeah, voice, face, all of that, I guess. A key piece of learning from your research is really how seriously to take the preparatory work that speech therapists do with people with MND and those around them, just to ensure that people are completely clear on what voice banking is, what it can achieve, what it's at in this current state not able to achieve. Is that one of the key messages coming out for you?
It is. Because, you know, just one other theme that came out was that only two of the people living with MND actually raised the issue that actually a voice bank is not the same as natural speech, because it has to be used through a machine. And that, you know, and they kind of thought that might even be a bigger issue than the voice itself. In a way, I found it surprising that actually only two had raised this issue, that actually, you know, this. And so I have some concerns about, you know, the way that voice banking is marketed, and, you know, it's not really the whole story. And the other piece that is that some people with MND and significant others raised some question marks about the support that they'd had from allied health professionals, that actually they felt that they'd been informed about it, but hadn't been given the practical support to go do it once they decided. And it took quite a while to sort that out. And also variations in advice where kind of in one team, one speech therapist had said, actually, your voice has changed too much. It won't be a good voice bank because it's too dysarthric, too slurred. Whereas another team member said, it's absolutely fine to go, and actually felt that there was, you know, more training for speech therapists. And but almost all of the people living with MD felt that they needed technical support to actually go through the voice banking process. And so it was just interesting hearing their views on that.
Can I just ask some practical questions about that? Because I'm not a therapist from this area. Tell us a bit about the practicalities of it. How does it normally happen?
Okay, so, you know, these days things have changed significantly and for the better in terms of the practicalities of going through a voice bank. And, you know, back in 2018, the average time to complete a voice bank was around 3 months, because people had to record 1,600 phrases, and there was multiple visits. And the MND Association ended up having a team of volunteers to help because there was no other way. Fast forward to 2021, and rather than 1,600 phrases, it's 50
wow.
phrases.
Wow.
And you can, you know, given a fair wind, set everything up, if you've got the headset microphone and all that kind of stuff, that's something that can be done in a session.
Yeah. So minimal, really very little impact for that person relative to the previous 1,600 sentences.
Yes. And so, the piece around training is highly valid. One thing I found that, you know, the best thing to kind of feel comfortable to help somebody to voice bank is to voice bank yourself. So the MND Association have twice monthly free voice banking training online, and it's completely free. And the idea is that speech therapists, or indeed any other allied health professional, can join and bank their voice there and then, and get and be able to demonstrate it where it matters. So, you know, I think one of the great things here is that regardless of whether somebody wants decides to bank their voice or not, and either is fine by me, just as long as it's their decision, that conversation can actually be a conversation about what is really going on, and that's the AAC. It's the communication device is what we're talking about. And so here we have, I think, a really good opportunity to talk to clients, to patients, a bit earlier on, perhaps, than speech therapists like myself would normally, because they want to do the voice banking. Okay, let's talk about voice. I'll demonstrate my voice bank to you. You can hear how it's different from my natural speech, so you can make a call on it. So, and by the way, this is AAC. This is where it all comes from. And yeah. Now let's talk about AAC.
Okay.
So I think...
That sounds like a really clear way to demonstrate, as you say, the sort of the potential of this technology, but also the limitations. Is there an optimum time within the kind of over the progression of the disease for people to consider this?
Ideally, if voice is unaffected by dysarthria, though the technology has moved on, that we have the option, even with moderate slurred speech dysarthria, that there are other providers that can blend healthy voices from the same area, same region, with dysarthric voices. So there are those options. And indeed, for people that do want to kind of voice bank, that you can actually have, if you have like YouTube recordings of interviews or anything like that, it doesn't have to be studio quality, that something can be created. But I just feel, having done this research, I just feel that the right person to make a decision on all of this is the person living with MND. And I think, speech language therapists, I think, is ideally placed to have a nice objective. Here are the facts. By the way, I'm going to demonstrate my banked voice to you. Either your decision is absolutely fine, and so we'll just go with what you want. And then if they change their mind later, fine. If they don't, that's fine. Yeah. There is another aspect that a kind of heard in these interviews, that actually the act of voice banking, to go through the process, felt like an achievable, positive and hopeful type of act. That, in the midst of some very difficult times, and in a way going through the process of voice banking gives an option for the future.
You've outlined some of the core components of your study to help us understand why we should feel that your findings were trustworthy. Is there anything else that you want to mention? And what about any limitations to your study?
Yeah, I'm pleased you mentioned the limitations, because this was a small sample and it's qualitative analysis, so it's not generalizable to the population. And although I actually tried to recruit more people who had chosen not to voice bank, but they were very hard to find. The net was spread, across England, but it turned out that the recruitment was mainly from the London area.
Okay.
The other thing was that, reflecting on the interviews, they were all quite long. They were, between up to 45 minutes. And, with motor neuron disease, fatigue is a significant factor.
Yeah.
And actually thinking back on it, it would have been better to offer more than one session, just to kind of make it easier. And of course, there was some kind of feedback around professionals, and I think it would have been lovely to have widened the research to professionals working there to enhance the strength of any recommendations I made.
Coming out of this activity, Richard, do you have any key recommendations for practice or for research in this area?
Yeah, for further research, some people living with MND and significant others felt that using a voice bank may help to maintain social, family, and indeed work relationships, and give positive psychological benefits. And I think this would be a really interesting area for future research, because the evidence base around MND is that social networks tend to fall away. And so finding some way to maintain those kind of networks is a good thing. And also, people living with MND are actually the major consumer of voice banking technology globally. And it would be really interesting to kind of research into kind of the usability and accessibility of voice banking products. I mean, given, why should this be an IT project? And it would be lovely to feed back to voice banking providers actually how things actually work. And I suppose, it would be lovely for a kind of more longitudinal study of how communication works and the input of the significance of voice banking in the wider concept of communication as MND progresses. Yeah. And just see and just get more, just more insight on that.
I'm going to kind of shoehorn it in here, I'm afraid, but I did want to mention that there is nice guidance around the assessment and management of people with MND. And there is a specific section about management of communication. And that's a real great thing for our profession, because sometimes the input of speech and language therapists may not be quite as much at the forefront as it is there, where the first subpoint does highlight the absolute integral part of speech and language therapy to this area and the need to have speech therapists on board.
I think voice banking is a really good opportunity to help patients or people living with MND understand the options for AAC and to help them better understand, kind of how things are, what their options are now, and what their options in the future, and support this kind of sense of information sharing and more balanced conversation about AAC. I think it also, from my perspective, it's an opportunity to work with people living with MND and indeed other progressive neurological diseases perhaps earlier than may currently be the case. And I think that could be beneficial for information provision, of course, but also rapport building and actually how things work, because communication is likely to be changing significantly over a period of time. So speech language therapy are going to be involved. The other piece, I think, is, kind of bank your own voice. And it's a great way. I found no better way, actually, to explain the strengths and the limitations of voice banking and how it actually works.
Thank you so much. I look forward to speaking to you again some point soon.
Thank you. Appreciate that.